Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, hour number two. We're coming to you live from the Tiki and Tierney Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience on this Monday. What's happening? A lot of hoops and a lot of good hoops. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206. I'm not saying this to be a, you know, a wise guy. If there's one person in the world, if there's anybody who actually thinks what the Lakers did this weekend will either A, work, or B, mm-hmm. is like smart, I'd love to hear from you. What the Lakers did this weekend. Here's the short version. Frank Vogel, because after a horrendous stint with the Magic, yep. after a very good stint with the Pacers,
yeah, but very good.
Horrendous stint with the Magic, Frank Vogel's value is at an all-time low. So Frank Vogel took the money, and I don't begrudge him for doing that. And Frank Vogel took the money and the terms that Tyronn Lue said, stick it, I'm better than that. Tyronn Lue said the exact amount of years, peace, not interested. So Frank Vogel took that. And then he also took Jason Kidd, shoved down his throat. How in the world is this a good setup for the Lakers?
I don't know how it's a good setup for Frank Vogel.
Because he's going to get paid. That's good.
Yeah, he's getting paid, but you're further going to erode whatever perception there was about you from his very successful, not like ultimately successful, but very successful stint at the Indiana Pacers, where he went to two conference finals. Now, he lost both of them, but he went there.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, he used to come on the show.
Oh, yeah. We gave the Tiki and Tierney mojo. Then he got a little too big for his bridges.
Exactly. Then he got fired the next year. Then he goes down to Orlando, and he missed the playoffs and finished the last in the division for 2 years in a row.
Right.
And now he's been sitting on the couch for a year. But now he's back.
Hey,
and
coach,
he's going
don't
to be,
diss us.
I agree. Exactly. He's going to be judged by... you know, how he interacts with LeBron. Now, I don't know Frank Vogel personally. We've chatted with him.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't necessarily, even though I could be wrong, feel like a LeBron James type of coach.
What is, define a LeBron James type of coach?
It's hard to actually
that's why I'm asking
to
you.
Say that, but someone who is younger with not a ton of experience.
So somebody who placates and kisses LeBron's behind?
Well, Or allows LeBron to be involved in the process.
Okay.
Right? So Spoelstra was this way, remember, because he was still a young head when he was with the Miami Heat.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing could be said about David Blatt, but he was older. He just new to the NBA, obviously, out of his Israeli success.
Yeah.
But that only lasted a year.
And that was a different personality.
David Blatt's a very different. But it's still, I think David Blatt and LeBron had a pretty decent working relationship. LeBron just ultimately didn't like him. He didn't want to be the head coach, so he got him ousted, and Ty Lue comes in, who had exactly zero experience, and it was young, and could, as a head coach.
And
LeBron could be a part of the process. Frank Vogel's been a head coach for 8 years, 7 years. You know, he's been around the block. He's got his methods ingrained in his head, and his process is already set. LeBron's not coming in and changing Frank Vogel's mind. And so you can already see that this is going to be a clash. And then you throw in the fact that really what he is the head coach in proxy of Jason Kidd.
That's right.
Who they want to be the head coach, but for various reasons, they can't actually hire right now for the head coach. So it's just it's an odd situation that feels like it's doomed to fail. Now,
it's not going to work.
Could I be wrong?
It's going to be a colossal failure.
Of course, I could be wrong. But this doesn't feel.
You won't be wrong.
This doesn't feel copacetic at all.
No, it's going to be horrendous. And, you know, I heard Stephen A. over the week. Actually, when it went down, that would have been Saturday night. Was that official?
Yep.
Saturday night made official. And he was jumping on SportsCenter. And he said, and it's interesting, he said part of the reason for this setup is that the Lakers really want Jason Kidd to be the coach. But based on a couple things, you know, some very unsightly blemishes on his resume, his personal resume, not so much his coaching resume. Domestic violence, domestic disputes,
DUI on the Hamptons.
Yep, years back with that. You know, that it's a little tough right now to present Jason Kidd as the front man. So what you do is you take somebody who seemingly is aware of the dynamic and willing to sign on for that, and then once that goes awry or once it becomes stale, that doesn't have to go awry and implode and get ugly. It could get a little stale. But see, the problem is that, like, I like Jason Kidd.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Kidd is the ultimate alpha.
Agreed.
And there is no chance that he doesn't willingly and aggressively sabotage Frank Vogel. Like, there's just no way around it. I don't know how else to say it.
I know.
It's like, he's going to, and I could be wrong, I believe he's going to look to take his legs out. And from day one at that introductory press conference, Jason Kidd's thinking, how do I get to that next seat on the bench?
Yeah, because Jason Kidd is the one that actually does have a good relationship with LeBron James, and they're going to be plotting, how do I get you, how do I do with you what I did with Ty Lue? And this is why, to be honest with you, Ty Lue didn't take this job for 3 years and whatever the number was, $18 million or $15 million, because he knew that that was what ultimately is going to happen. You're tying your contract to an aging superstar. And in most cases, you know, on some other team constructions, that's probably a good thing, right? If you have some vets and you're taking a shot at winning a championship, you know, I'm going to go try to win a championship with LeBron James and some other, you know, decent pieces. I'd sign up for that for 3 years. Why not, right? It gives you a launching point to go do something else. But the Lakers aren't that team right now. I mean, unless they get a couple of these guys in free agency, these big names that are going to come free in free agency, they're going to have much of the same season. Maybe they win 5 or 10 more games than they did last year, but they're not competing for a championship next year. And so Frank Vogel's is getting back into the game, and that's good for him because he did have a year off, but it seems like he's being set up for failure and, worse, being set up to be sabotaged.
We're on the same page. And, you know, maybe Frank Vogel was reading the league, and his representation was doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wasn't thought as highly as he once was. And this is his way back in the door. And I don't begrudge him for that. It's a different, it's the complete antithesis of Indianapolis and Orlando. Relatively sleepy towns with patient fan bases. I don't want to say minimal expectations in the case of the Pacers. And the Magic are clearly ascending right now. I like what they're doing, but it's not L.A. Nothing is. It's a totally different dynamic. So, you know, if this is what Frank wants to do, I wish him luck. I do like Frank. I do think he's a good basketball coach.
I do, too.
But when you get to that third job, right, and you have success early and then you're met by unmitigated failure, that next job is pivotal. You've got, if you want to be a coach in the NBA, I'm not talking about payroll, bank account. He's set for life. His kids are set for life. He's fine. Money's fine. But if Frank Vogel wants to coach in the NBA another 10, 12, 15 years, this better work out.
Yeah.
Because if this goes sideways fast, he's not getting hired again.
No, I think you're right. And it's not going to be his fault, but it's going to be on his resume. It's what happens. You get these coaches sometimes. You see it in all sports. They take these jobs because it's their opportunity, but then they accumulate so many L's. It's just like, You can't legitimize it, right? It doesn't go away.
Because it's hard to sell to the fan base, new fan base.
Exactly.
Hey, everybody, welcome in so-and-so.
He's got a 32% win percentage.
His previous stop, he went a robust 30-52, followed by 27, and do the math, whatever, 40-something. Here he is. He's here to lead us. All right, bring him up, everybody. Yeah. It's like three reporters in the seats.
Agreed. Agreed. Hey. And I don't know. Look, maybe this works out, but I don't think it's going to.
It's just bizarre. They are so lost right now. The Lakers are, I don't even know what word, like, the dysfunctional is not enough. Disgrace is too obvious. They're, I want to be a little smarter than that. That's, anybody could just throw those words out.
Yeah.
They just seem as if they're directionless. That's the way I'll frame it.
Yeah.
Their direction is not defined right now.
I think they have in their minds, they have a plan. I'm not sure if it's the right one or if it's fully thought out, because obviously Jason Kidd was pushed on Ty Lue as well. So they want J- Jason Kidd to be a part of this. And then probably some of that, at least what they're probably telling themselves, is that this is because we need someone who's familiar with LeBron James, even though it didn't make sense because Ty Lue is as familiar with anybody on the planet with LeBron James, having coached him for three seasons. So it just doesn't make sense to me what the Lakers are trying to do.
And
if you want Jason Kidd, I'd almost feel better if they wanted Jason Kidd to be their head coach, to just hire Jason Kidd as your head coach.
I'm with you.
And you know what? You're going to get some backlash because people are going to say, well, he did this and he did that. And he's, you know, he had failed in Milwaukee and he failed. And he peaced out on the Nets and all this other stuff. But live with it, right? Take it on the chin. And you know what? When he turns out to be a really good head coach, you can say, I told you so. Mm-hmm. But to do this like extraneous, we're going to hire this guy, but you got to take – You're not going to build your own staff, and you got to take Jason Kidd, and Jason Kidd's going to be there. He's going to be the direct contact with LeBron James, and you know, maybe you have some interaction with it.
Like they think they're fooling us.
It just feels
like we don't know what they're doing. We know what you're doing. We see the plan.
If you wanted to hire Jason Kidd, just hire Jason Kidd.
I agree. You lose a little respect for a franchise when they are afraid or unwilling or both to remain publicly married to their inner conviction. That's just weak.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't react. I mean, sometimes you have to. Like if there's a crime, you know, obviously Kareem Hunt had to go. You know, like situations like that. Ray Rice from the Ravens had to go. And Jason Kidd did have a drinking infraction, granted, and the domestic issue as well. So he's had both.
Yeah. It was a little convoluted, though.
But I mean, if you think that he's the guy, then just take the PR hit on the chin and put your plan in motion and go with it. Like to introduce it in dribbles and drabbles and like to throw us off scent. Who are you fooling?
Nobody.
It's ridiculous.
Nobody.
It really is.
But they're trusting their own inner circle. I don't think there's an advisor outside of the Lakers that is advising them. It's internal. And I guess, I don't know.
It's odd. Is a good way to frame it. You want to leave it at odd?
Best way to frame it.
Okay. T, coming up next, former, Wahoo. To Brickenshaw Ferguson, terrific Jet for a long time. Left tackle, too bad he didn't really have a quarterback all those years. I mean, you know, revolving door. I wish he would have been there now with Sam Darnold, but of course he's not. But he's going to be in studio, talk about the NFL. And what is it with these Virginia guys who get to the NFL, then they stop lifting weights and they become marathon runners? What is it with you guys?
He's only doing a half marathon.
Oh, only a half. Well, he's 6'5". I don't know if he should do 26.2.
Yeah, he should probably.
Brick is in the house coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Okay, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico. Quick way to save a little money. Switch to Geico. Just go to geico.com and in 15 minutes save 15% or more on car insurance on this wet, washed out, dreary, dank, what else is new? Monday in New York City, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Good news, obviously, as we get ready for the PGA Championship at Bethpage. Weather is going to incrementally get better. It's going to be very wet tomorrow, but Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday into next week will be sunny, so it'll dry out. So there shouldn't be interruptions like there were back in 2009 when I was out there for that. It was just really wet, and that was a rough sell, but I think the course should be pretty good. But look who's here. Who is this guy? Who is this skinny guy? What is with you marathon guys?
It's like not. These ex-football. It's us Virginians.
What's going on?
Us Virginians. Us Wahoos like to get in shape when we're done playing.
Brick!
That's right.
What's up to Brickenshaw Ferguson?
How you doing?
How you doing today, buddy?
I'm well.
Congrats on a terrific career, by the way.
Yeah.
Terrific career.
Let me ask you about this. You're running the Brooklyn Half Marathon on Saturday. I'm running it as well. It'll be my fourth time running it. That's where I set my half marathon PR. It's a great course. It ends on Coney Island. You're gonna enjoy it. But Acts for Compassion is the charity that you're running for. You're doing this with your brother and your uncle, your best friend. And it's interesting because it's in El Salvador. What's the connection?
Yeah, you know, I think, I had a desire to do something. You know, given that being an NFL athlete is such a unique experience and so few people have a chance to do that, I wanted to be able to tap back and you know, give back. And we just felt called, my wife and I, to just, you know, work with compassion. We had a chance to go on a couple of missions trips to El Salvador. They're international, so they're not limited to El Salvador, but that was an area that we had reached to, felt like it was close enough. We wanted to get our kids involved at some point just to support people, right? Everybody doesn't have the same level of finances. Everybody doesn't have the same level of opportunity. And so this was just our way of kind of getting involved.
Now, why a half marathon? What made you? Because this is your second one
you've done, right? Yeah, my uncle. So the first one was in the Bahamas.
Oh, nice.
And he's like, look, you know, I want to do something with the family. We should run. And I want you and your brother to run a half marathon. Everybody else can run like the 5K relay.
Uh-huh.
But you and your brother have to do the half. And I'm like, why? Like, why?
You know, it's not like you're running. You're 6'6".
I'm like, I don't. He's like, you're an athlete. You know, you can do it. And I think a lot of times when people think that you've played football, that, oh, you can just do anything athletic. And I'm like, that is not the case.
Running's hard. I absolutely hate it. We were talking during the break, I hate running. Yeah. I hate it. It's boring.
What are you expecting? It's going to be awesome out there, by the way. I'm telling you, I've done a lot. New York Roadrunners are fantastic. I've become really close with them over the years. The crowd is amazing going through Brooklyn. It's going to be right near where my BT's crib. used to BK. Live out that way.
Mm-hmm. My parents are still there.
I'm hearing that it's going to be like 27,000 runners, and that's going to be new because the Bahamas wasn't that many. Yeah. Maybe a couple thousand.
Yeah.
Wasn't that many.
So yeah, you run to the beach, you run to the bar, you don't actually run for a race.
It wasn't easy. No, it was not easy. But I think I just want to enjoy the experience, you know, be in New York closer to, you know, home versus, you know, overseas.
Yeah.
So I'm just excited to just learn what it's like.
So we're joined by DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who's with us here in studio. Former Jet, played a long time. Didn't hang on too long. He got out in your 32 or 33 when you retired?
Yeah, sounds about right.
You had a couple of years to go. You were still obviously functional and viable on the left side. I always got the sense that, and I still get the sense that, especially for a left tackle, and there's a lot of guys who go through this. You're either blessed to get drafted to a team that has a quarterback that is there, you know, whether it's better part of a decade or even more, mm-hmm. and you always have continuity, or you just go to a team that is always trying to find a quarterback. And you kind of fell into the latter, even though Sanchez for a couple of years was fine. That's got to be frustrating because you're trying to build the cohesion with your other guys up front, but the guy behind you, not to take a shot at some of these guys, but the level of quarterback that you played with, you know, it was average is probably being a little kind. So how do you deal with that as a pro? It's got to be frustrating.
You know, I would say I think a lot of times the quarterback position gets a lot of attention. But ultimately, it's a team sport. You know, I think we've had a lot of moving pieces, quarterbacks, coaching,
mm-hmm.
you know, line, like a lot of moving parts. So I can't, you know, really isolate any one position. But what I will say is it's great to have stability. I think stability allows you to do well for a long period of time. I mean, you look at the Patriots and some of the things that they've been able to do, and I think it's a testament to just stability. But I will say this year, you know, with the Jets, and some of the moves that they've made, I think they have a real shot to do something special. They've made a lot of changes, but it seems like now they have pieces that can last for a long period of time. They've made a huge investment in, you know, quarterbacks and running backs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm optimistic that, you know, what you talked about, maybe that instability that we've suffered for, you know, many years can kind of change a little bit.
Why is Darnold different? And by the way, I share that enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Totally agree with what you said. Why is Sam Darnold different?
I think, you know, he's a young guy. He's shown already little sparks of like, okay, this guy can be special, you know. And I think, you know, the one thing that the NFL doesn't give you is a whole lot of time. So mm-hmm. obviously everybody wants him to be great today.
Yeah.
And regardless of how good he is, he's going to get better as time progresses, as he gets more comfortable in the NFL, as he begins to – all these new pieces – you know, running backs, coaches, they kind of solidify a little bit. I think then you'll be able to see, oh, now he's really blossoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's a different regime that's there now at the Jets. But you were there with Geno Smith.
Geno
was,
yeah.
I mean.
I always thought he could be good.
I agree.
I did.
I agreed. From the outside looking in for us, it felt like they're rushing him. They're trying to push him into situations where he can't be successful, at least not immediately. It's going to crush his confidence. And it's almost like he was doomed to failure because of the circumstances he was put in, not because he wasn't a good quarterback. That feels different now. What was it like with Geno when Geno was there? Because I think he's a lesson in how not to handle a really good young quarterback.
You know, I think Geno was a talent. I think our goal was always to figure out how we can get the most out of everybody, you know. Regardless of what a player produces, it's like if we can just play at a high level consistently. And I think something that we you know, sometimes didn't do well as a team is just be consistent. You know, have good games, mm-hmm. win games we probably weren't supposed to, and then lose games that we were definitely supposed to win. And I think that can hurt you.
He had talent, too. He really did. I believe you were on the team at this point still. Maybe you just retired the previous year. Remember the game in Green Bay? Were you with Morning Wig for a year? Was Marty? Yeah, okay. So yeah, I thought you were on. Okay. Yeah. So there was a play. Marty Morning Wig was the coordinator, not the head coach. Yeah. Rex was coach. And he called timeout. Do you remember this game in Green Bay?
I do remember.
And Geno threw like a 37-yard strike on a rollout off 1 foot to the back of the end zone that was negated because the – I don't want to call him a clown. Marty Morningway, not even the coach, with like 30 seconds of the game, calls timeout before the ball is snapped.
A little confusion.
Yeah, a little confusion. I mean, that's an understatement. I feel like there's a lot of Geno Smiths in the NFL, guys who are talented, guys that could move their feet, little wiggle, good arms, but – if you don't get drafted to the right spot, boy, it's a real detriment. You almost have to get lucky where you get drafted to, right?
You can't really control where you get drafted. I think, you know, wherever you are, you know, one of the things that I always feel if I'm talking to a younger player is like, you know, you might have had a lot of success in college, but you have to figure out how to transition that success in the league. And I think that's an individual journey. You know, nobody can really tell you what that's like because you have to navigate that, you know. Mm-hmm. When I came to the league, Kimo Vonhoeffen was a prominent player. And, you know, you don't get a chance to go against guys who are 10 years your senior in college. You know, so he's looking at me and he's like, oh, you're athletic. You got some speed.
Grown-ass man.
And then he just put his hands on me. And I'm like, oh, this is different. Yeah. So that's when I knew. I'm like, man, I gotta gain some weight. You know, I can't have these guys, you know, jerking my shoulder pads around. But I think you figure out. You know, sometimes through failure, okay, this is my game. I'm an athletic tackle. I have long arms. I got to use my length. Got to use my speed. Got to use my size, which I'm gonna obtain through just hard work. Yeah. And eating. Yeah.
You grew up here, right? You're from
Long Island.
How'd you end up in Virginia?
Well, my brother, you know, Ed, he went to UVA, and they recruited me pretty heavily. I mean, Ron Prince, Al Groh.
Yep.
That was that regime. I mean, I think I might have seen every coach. You know, Danny Rocco. They all came down. And
You know all those names, right?
Yeah, of course.
Danny Rocco.
He was in a transition period with UVA for a little bit there. You like Bronco Mendenhall? Have you met him yet?
I haven't met him, but, you know, I hope that, you know, UVA football can have similar success as UVA basketball at some point.
I wouldn't bank on that. You know, you win a championship.
You know, at some point.
Championship?
In different eras and different regimes, we've always kind of like, you know, gotten real close. And so I'm just hoping that at some point, you know, we can just be in the conversation.
Like, did you go to any of the Hoops games?
I did not.
Come on.
I've been in the past. I did not this year.
Gotcha. And you got kids. You're married. You got things going on.
Yeah.
This guy's always been classy, hasn't he?
I know.
He's always been classy.
I understand.
DeBrick and Shaw Ferguson is with us here on Tiki and Tierney.
You know, it's you mentioned the New England Patriots, and BT, obviously, is a huge Jets fan. We've been talking about this for, I don't know, as long as we've been doing the show together, 7 years almost.
Yep.
The Pats got to fall at some point.
Yeah.
You see it happening anytime soon?
I'd love to say, you know, this is the year, but it's hard. I mean, they got a special thing going on, and I think, you know, luckily the Giants have always done well against them. So maybe it's time for you guys, you know, come back along.
Were you a Giants fan or a Jets fan growing up? Were you a football fan growing up?
I don't think I was a huge football fan. My dad was from the Bahamas. My mom was a mom, so she didn't obviously want me playing football. But my brother, he was the one that kind of like you know, followed the game.
Got you going.
Yeah.
You know what I wanted to ask you? I mean, even though you're naturally thinner than some of these other left tackles, like you had to really work to put the weight on and to keep it on.
Better that than the opposite.
True. You are 6'6", though. So in terms of height, you're legitimately tall. And most quarterbacks, 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". You get a few outliers a little taller than that. But now you start to see the other direction. What would it be like in the huddle looking down at a 5'9½" quarterback? Would it be a little unnerving?
No, I mean, when I played at UVA, Marcus Hagins, he was a short quarterback, very mobile. I mean, Mike Vick is not the tallest guy either.
True.
Very mobile. And so a lot of times, you know, with those guys, you just have to make sure you're always on because you never know where they'll be.
You mean they're building improvisational
they can escape
stuff?
Trouble or maybe, you know, and they're very fast. So you're like, oh, he's to my right. But when you see the DN just jerk left, you're like, oh, man, he's out there. So those guys keep you on your toes. It's a different game slightly, you know. But
do you think you have to draft different kind of offensive linemen to work with that kind of quarterback?
That's a good question.
I think they need to, you know, have feet. Definitely have quick feet and know how to, you know, change the direction. But I mean, I think a lot of offensive linemen, you know, have that at the league level.
Do you think that's going to work for Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals? This air raid, you know, just what we see in college is slowly inching its way into the NFL. You think it's going to work?
I don't know. I mean, we've had success with quarterbacks that are very athletic and so forth, but you know, to make a whole kind of like a blanket statement like that's going to work,
yeah,
and kind of step away.
That's what we
do in
sports radio. We just make things up. The world, we forget about it.
I guess that's why I'm a guest.
Yes, exactly. This Saturday out in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Half Marathon, DeBrickashaw Ferguson is running along with his brother and his uncle and his best friend to raise awareness for Acts for Compassion. You can see his shirt, Team Up with Compassion. And if you want to donate, www.actforcompassion.com, C-Brick-Run. C-Brick-Run. I'll be out there with you.
I appreciate it.
I'll be way in front of you.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll be very far ahead. But if you wait by the finish line, you know.
Oh, I'll be hanging out by the finish line. They
great
have,
scene
they have
Brick,
great
man.
Beers at the finish line.
One of the class acts and really a terrific career, man. I was always... always knew for a better part of a decade we had it on lockdown on the left side. Between you and Nick.
Well, thank you.
I mean, left tackle center. We were pretty good with Mangold and Brick for a long time. Good seeing you, buddy.
I appreciate it.
All right, go get those running shoes on, man.
Thank you, man.
Lace them up tight. Coming up next, we got Axe Update. And then how about this? A little football at the 40s. And one of the quarterbacks, a rookie, already turning heads, and he's turning them quick in minicamp. We'll tell you who it is and what's happening after Axe Update, which is right now. Okay, football at the 40s coming up here on Tiki. It's here at CBS Sports Radio. First up, though, time for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot. It's the next generation of home improvement. Everything you need to do Project Smarter. It's the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. As we take a look at somebody who's doing a whole lot for his team, or he did a whole lot for his team, how about the Astros' George Springer, outfielder? Pretty perfect yesterday, 5 for 5 with 2 bombs and 4 ribbies. 5 runs scored in the Astros' 15-5 blowout win. Springer now 18 for his past 39. That is not a bad run for a professional ball player. It's pretty good for high school. You go 18 for 39 in the show, you are on fire. Helping the Astros to 8 wins in their past 10 games. So, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network, Tiki and Tierney, Sirius XM 206, obviously, on Twitter, Tiki and Tierney, at Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney.
BT, someone tweeted us. Herman Moore?
Herman, how'd you forget about Herman Moore?
I have no idea.
He was like one of the better ones.
He's like the pioneer for the current age.
Like yeah,
you
could see that.
You could go back to some of the older heads. But
I could see that.
Like for the modern game of football, it was him.
Yeah.
Right?
He was so good. He had
the magic man before him.
Good.
Don
Majkowski.
He was UVA.
That's
He almost had a perfect senior or fourth year, I should say, at UVA.
In what sense? You mean in terms of like not losing?
Like completion percentage. No. It's like completion percentage and interception.
Like a perfect quarterback rating?
Yeah, I think he might have thrown one interception or something like that. He has some ridiculous like stat from his last year at college. But Herman's the man.
Herman
we have him on
beast.
The show every year,
yep,
too. So
yep.
Shame on us, or shame on me, I should say, for forgetting that, because he was a stud at UVA. Not only was he obviously a fantastic football player, but he had the high jump record.
Yes, that's right. You always reference that when he comes in. excuse me, when I worked in Detroit, Herman... He may have played on that team because he played for the Giants for a minute at the end.
Yeah, he probably was on that
early
team.
Early 2000s, yeah. Is that about right? 2002. Yeah. I was there in 01, 02. No, I was
there
in 03.
When did Herman retire? 02 with the Giants, yeah.
Okay, so then I just missed him in Detroit, but he was still around.
Yep.
Just revered in Detroit. And obviously never won the Super Bowl, but he had one season. He had over 100 catches back then when... And weren't as plentiful as they are now. They weren't those little screen bubbles.
Three seasons?
And,
yeah, 3 seasons over 100 catches.
Yeah. I mean, Herman Moore had, you know, if he short of the Hall of Fame, but not by much.
Agreed.
Herman Moore was pretty damn good.
And it's unfortunate. He's penalized because of the lack of success of the team.
Barry Sanders.
Yep. Barry wasn't penalized. Obviously.
No, of course not. I want to say Scott Mitchell was the quarterback. That was Wayne Fonts. They lost the 91 championship game. The 1991 NFC title game.
Mm-hmm.
And, Herman Moore was absolutely great. Terrific player. And Majkowski, he's the answer to a trivia question. Brett Favre came in.
Oh, that's
when
right.
When Brett Favre came that's in and right. threw that touchdown off the bench to
that's
win
right.
the game,
that's
Magic
right.
Man was he got hurt.
That's right.
The Magic Man. All right, football at the 40s. Let's go.
40-yard kick right hash mark.
40 yards on the return.
A 40-yard touchdown.
40 yards.
You
love football. We love football. So we give you football every day. It's Football at the 40 with Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, don't want to overreact to this because we've seen a million stories written over the years. Not saying it's not true. Not saying it's not a foreshadow of what could be an incredible career for the Redskins with Dwayne Haskins, but he is turning some heads big time at minicamp, and we always see the stories, you know, so-and-so, you know, a veteran entering training camp or spring training in the best shape of his career. You know, I mean, sometimes we are a little hyperbolic in how we react to non-game stuff, but it seems if it's going really well for Dwayne Haskins. Yep. Any buyer's lament maybe with the Jones pick at 16?
Not right now. Maybe, you know, come actual training camp when they're not running around in their underwear. It's like I like to call it when they don't have any pads on. So there's zero contact. There's actually no pressure on a quarterback to have to make a throw. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's peril to his body. But it's interesting how this is being positioned down there, BT, because Dwayne Haskins, according to Jay Gruden, is being given the opportunity to win the starting job. But it's not going to be a three-man competition. So Case Keenum, who they signed this offseason or traded for this offseason for a $5 million deal for the Denver Broncos, and Colt McCoy are currently on the roster. So out of those three, including Dwayne Haskins, one of them is the odd man out. Hmm. And I think if
it's going to be McCoy, right?
Well, it depends. If Dwayne Haskins, once they actually get to, you know, the vet mini camp and they start to push towards the regular seasons, if Dwayne Haskins looks like really, really good and could be the starter, I think Case Keenum might be the odd man out.
Case Keenum.
It's odd, man, down there, but we'll see.
Case banking a lot of money for not doing a whole lot.
Dude, they love him. They love they love Colt McCoy. Oh, you're talking about Case. Yeah.
I mean, Case Keenum is good for the quarterback room. Case Keenum is good, you know, spot duty. Case Keenum will not win you anything of significance if he's the starting quarterback for 16 games.
Right.
And it's not a knock. It's a little physical limitation, right. You know. Here's a quote from Jay Gruden, quote, about Haskins. It's been a treat. He's made some throws that turn your head without a doubt, end quote. Doug Williams added, it don't take long for the ball to get from point A to point B. We know he's got a rocket, so early returns good for the Redskins and their young quarterback. All right, Teak, how about this? The Miami Dolphins with an interesting signing. They bring in running back Mark Walton and had a nice workout over the weekend, rookie minicamp. 2018 fourth-round pick out of Miami, but arrested three times before being waived by the Bengals. And let's be honest, if you have a little bit of of a rap sheet and you can't play for the Bengals, then generally you can't play for anybody because they're usually pretty accepting of those.
Yeah, the Bengals are – yeah, I agree with you. But the Bengals, now that they've moved on from their former head coach – a different philosophy with this. Look, Mark Walton is a extraordinarily talented running back. A little bit of injury issues, but it's the off the field stuff that's troubling to you. This can go one of two ways, BT.
Mm-hmm.
He's going back home. I say that in a sense because he's a University of Miami grad. So it's either going to lead to more trouble or there's familiarity, which mm-hmm. kind of scoots him away from it. This is risky, I think, but there could be huge upside if he keeps his nose clean.
He's talented, there's no doubt. Here's what their new head coach, Brian Flores, said Saturday. Quote, people deserve a second chance. Nobody's going to disagree with that assertion. He went on to say, I don't want to judge people based on one or two incidents, although he did have three, to be fair, coach. I don't think it's a case-by-case situation for a player and just for people in general. It's kind of my stance. So listen, keep it fluid. Give him a chance. Keep an open mind. And, they are trying to find talent. And when you're a rebuilding team, if you could find cheap talent, if you believe that he's right mentally and he's on the right path, give him a shot. And if not, it's a low risk. What are you going to do?
Agreed.
Not a big deal. This could be a big deal, some people think. We talked about how yoked Christian McCaffrey's gotten here. And he aims to be way stronger. That's what he said. I want to be stronger than I was a year ago. The faster I can get, the better as well. You can always get bigger, faster, stronger. I don't have any choice. I have to. He went on to say, to me, speed kills, and he's feeling good about himself. But there are some people around the league who wonder slash worry if McCaffrey's getting a little bit too thick. What do you think?
Yeah, that's because they're looking at his arms in some of these pictures this offseason. And look, still pitchers always inflate
musculature. It is what it is.
They don't do that for me, oddly. Yeah, I mean, make me look good.
You don't have enough muscle. That's why. Yeah, but see, like you probably just got out of the gym at a spring mini camp or off season workout. So the only thing you're not really playing football. You're just lifting weights and getting stronger and hopefully getting a little bit faster. And so he goes out on the field. He's got his sleeves rolled up. He looks jacked because he just did, 15 sets of bicep curls, supersetted it. And then someone takes a picture when he's cutting, and he's flexed at the right time.
I don't think he was lifting weights right before he went on the field.
I guarantee you he was lifting weights right before he went on the field. I guarantee you.
I can't prove that. I know this
because I used to do the same thing. It is what it is. It's a vanity
Maybe it was
play.
Leg day. Look, you don't know that. Maybe nonsense. It was leg day.
It doesn't matter if it's leg day. It's always arm day. You know what I mean? So,
you're not concerned.
I'm not concerned at all. You put on as much weight as you can, BT, prior to training camp, because you know, especially for a kid like him, you know you're going to lose it.
But even for speed positions?
Absolutely. Okay. BT, I used to go to training camp like 220, right? Because I knew that by the time it was over, I'd be about 208.
Okay.
Right? Because
you would know.
You lose weight.
Yeah.
Because Christian McCaffrey is a, extraordinarily fit human being.
Yeah.
So you can't carry extra weight. Your body doesn't let you carry extra weight. So you lift and get big and strong, and then when you go through the atrocious nature of, a month in camp, you end up getting right where you need to be. So don't be worried, people.
Is he a star?
He is right on the cusp of being a superstar, BT.
I was going to say superstar, and I caught myself. So you think he's getting to superstar status?
He's right
status?
There, man. Especially if they trust him and start saying, you can handle, 270, 80 touches a season, then... Yeah.
All right. White Lightning. He's a beast.
I love him.
Yeah, me too. All right. I love this as well, though I didn't love the first part of it. Looks like Le'Veon Bell is going to be at the Jets' mandatory minicamp
here. Why wouldn't he be?
I mean, because he doesn't show up for anything.
He showed up for the voluntary workouts. He wasn't at the voluntary minicamp.
I understand, but it's still good to see this and read this and hear this from head coach Adam Gase, the new coach of the Jets. We had a conversation about what his kind of schedule should be. We'll kind of see how the OTAs go. As of right now, I know the mandatory stuff, So I don't expect him to not show up for minicamp on June 4th through the 6th. No, I thought he would show up for this as well, but
yeah,
I just want to see him on a field.
No, I agree.
It's been a little while.
It's been a long while.
Yeah.
And the first time you want to see him is also when you're, doing football-related things. As I mentioned, he did show up for the voluntary workout, but that's just working out. Nobody sees that.
Yep.
It is what it is. You want to see him on the field and, give your fans, these Jet fans, some excitement about what his potential could be. Because he's a stud. This is what it is.
Nah, he's a superstar.
Exactly. As long as he hasn't lost a step, which I don't see it happening, then Jets are going to be very happy once the regular season starts.
I was told to Quincy Enunwa, who, by the way, is coming back on the show. He loves. He's been on with us a few times. Great guy. He presented me with the check
at
the Derby on Saturday. And I said, how's Lev? Because, how's he? He said, I was hanging out with him the other day. I said, is he in really good shape? He said, he's yoked. He's ready to roll. And I said, all right, Q, nice. So we thought that this might happen. It doesn't look as if it will. There were weeks of rumors. The Broncos, though, apparently not going to trade their star corner, Chris Harris. We know he wants a new contract.
Yep.
They're also at that very interesting point where they're kind of rebuilding, but they haven't really... identify that or said that or embrace that publicly. Not that they should, but I believe that they should trade him. It doesn't look as if they will. Of course, somebody could go down in camp and then somebody could make an aggressive offer to trade for him. Right now, it looks like he's going to stick.
It looks like he's going to stick and he's going to be unhappy about this. The career arcs, intersection windows aren't overlapping, really. 8 seasons, you see. He's been to the Pro Bowl 4 times. He was first team all pro. About 3 years ago or so. So, he's a good player, really good player, and he's been great for this Denver Broncos team and the schemes that they like to run. But it feels like something's got to give, and you hit this right on the head, BT. If someone gets hurt and gets desperate for someone gets hurt on a team that's competing, meaning that has a chance to win the division, maybe go deep in the postseason, and they need a star corner, then that's when Chris Harris will be trade bait.
There you go.
That was Football at the 40 with Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Also mentioned it earlier, if you missed it, not a huge story, but just to connect the dots. Geno Smith signs with Seattle as a backup to Russell Wilson, played previously or watched previously for the L.A. Chargers behind Phillip Rivers. Before that, was with the Giants for a minute. For the most part, watched Eli before they benched him and he played Oakland.
Patino's got a... it's hard to define his career. It's interesting.
At this point, I'll define it for you. Transient.
He never really got a shot.
No, I agree. I agree. Hoops, third hour, coming up.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.